Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Tune into our weekly radio show. For more information, go to checkpointradio.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Radio Podcast from Westwood One. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint Radio Show. My name's Nate Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
Norris Howard.
Yeah, yo.
And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan.
Psyched to be here.
All right. Last time I challenged you guys that I wanted to double the amount of iTunes reviews that we got this year than in our previous year. And
have we already made it in 1 week?
Oh, well, Tell steps up to the plate here and says, these guys should be way more popular than they are. Well, Tell, thank you very much for the review. I agree wholeheartedly.
Short and sweet.
Straight to the point.
I dig it.
Five stars.
It's also kind of an underhanded, like, slap, but at the same time, these should be way more popular than they are.
Yeah. Well,
they're poor and unheard of, but they really shouldn't be.
We're a diamond in the rough. How about that?
I like that.
I can do that. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much, Welltel. We appreciate the review. Please find Checkpoint Radio on iTunes. Subscribe. Leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. If you've only heard us from the podcast, know that we have a full radio show. You can find full episodes on demand over at our website, checkpointradio.com. And you can also find a schedule to see if the show is on in a city near you. And we would ask that maybe you spend some time tuning in to the actual radio, because that's where you can actually hear the show first. Well, actually, technically, you can hear it really, really first when we do it live over twitch.tv.
Really first?
Really, really first.
Really, really first.
At twitch.tv/checkpointradio, you can actually have live input on the show, and we'll actually, every once in a while, read your comments live on the air. And eventually, I think the plan is still that we may end up taking live calls over Twitch.
Awesome.
So that's a second reason that you would want to tune in live. That goes down every Wednesday over at twitch.tv/checkpointradio. And then after we finish the radio show, after we finish recording the radio show, we sit down and do this very podcast. So if you want to be a part of the Twitch chat, again, that goes down Wednesdays over at twitch.tv/checkpointradio. And again, we want to try to get 60 iTunes reviews this year. So help us do that. We've got one under our belt. That's
one
good.
Down.
All right.
The first one's the hardest.
59 more to go. So
how many days in a year left? 300?
You're asking me to do a whole lot of math there that
my
I can't
bad.
Do off the top of my head.
So
the
point is, we got a lot of opportunity for them reviews.
That's right. So make sure that you go do that. If you haven't already, seek out the page over at iTunes, search Checkpoint Radio, and you'll be able to find it. All right. Let's check out what we were talking about this week on the radio show, because this was a some of the conversations were a little bit more serious, a little bit more heavy than they normally are.
This is a deep week.
It was a deep week, and an opportunity for some reflection. But we start off, though, talking, of course, about the Fiesta Bowl Collegiate National Championship that went down on the campus of Arizona State University last weekend. I really enjoyed myself watching this, and I at the request of you guys, have been trying to watch more and be more engaged with the Overwatch League, so that I have kind of a little bit more of an idea of what's going on. And so I felt like an extension of that would be to watch the Fiesta Bowl. And I was really surprised by how different it was in just not just the gameplay, but in terms of the presentation as well.
I would like to really commend you on that, because the fact that you're able to differentiate those two things means that it's more than just trying, like, all right, you know, they want me to watch it, so I guess I'm going to watch it. You're actually absorbing something, too.
Well, I mean, you know, when you know that a big meta shift is going to be incoming, and I mean, the broadcast staff was reminding us that
of
that the entire time.
Every moment.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that, you know, I guess I didn't realize how often I was starting to pick up on the patterns of the same picks
sure.
over and over and over again from the OWL. And so when I was seeing plays that involved heroes that I wasn't necessarily familiar with in pro play, I was really interested in seeing the way that they would be played at high levels. And that's actually, you know, again, we do record the show on a Wednesday. OWL is tonight. In fact, the first night of Group 2. So they're now playing under the new meta as well. And we've been commenting on, you know, a lot of the picks that have been going on in the new meta. And, you know, specifically some of the tank choices and some of the rush, healer choices that are going on.
Yeah, because right now, like, you know, you got teams, you know, running Zarya right now in OWL. And that was something that we said on the show that we immediately noticed was that Zarya was being used a lot more in that collegiate final. Mm-hmm. And so I guess in a way it was a little bit prophetic because we are in this current meta and we see that both teams were running Zarya at the time. So, yeah, it's literally a different game to watch.
For me with the collegiate scene, what I was happy about is that even though the production looked very different, it didn't look lesser.
I would think that that's a bit surprising coming from the collegiate scene. However, it was clear that Blizzard was running some assistance with the production.
Blizzard, TESPA, and the Fiesta Bowl. They were all there.
Joe, I'm going to forgive that comment because, you know, you're obviously not, I think, as in tune with some of the skins that those college players were using. But I would say that without having the team skins, some of their skin choices, they definitely should have been penalized for.
Well,
I'm just saying.
I'm commenting.
Goth, Zarya, really?
I'm commenting a little bit more on the actual stage production.
That's
what I was thinking.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, yeah. No.
Robbie just seems a little butthurt. I don't think he likes me making a point on Overwatch.
No, he doesn't.
It seems him a little bit insecure for some reason.
I would like to
reason.
Point out that when
that
you
is.
Make points on another esport, you mess everything up and the winning teams lose.
It can't be a winning team. If they lost.
Sorry, the favored teams lose.
There you go.
Right.
Just don't talk about Houston.
I think Houston's a great team.
They're done.
I mean, if
they're
I had to
done.
Pick a team to go all the way this year, it would absolutely be Houston.
It's over.
You just tanked your team, Robbie.
I'm it's pushing over. You into traffic.
Rip. I do think that the stage production, the broadcast production, all of that was very well done. And yes, there were some hiccups.
Oh yeah,
there were definitely some, you know, production accidents that happened. But I actually really like seeing those things, and I like seeing those things because it's clear that people who are not, you know, quite the professionals, maybe the B team.
Yeah,
sure.
Not the big time.
Right. They're getting their opportunity to kind of hone their skills. And I really do hope that, you know, as more and more colleges start to form not just esports programs, but, you know, maybe they have, you know, esports broadcasting classes that end up coming about, that we'll see local talent being tapped to be the shout casters or tapped to be, you know, part of the local production crew.
Well, and one thing that I really wanted to hit on that I thought was something that we didn't really get a good chance to talk about it is the actual formatting of the tournament that I thought actually benefited being able to watch something like this, because when OWL comes on, I mean, for the most part, if you're into it, that's what you're doing for those 4 days in the evening. It's just, I'm watching Overwatch at nighttime.
Right.
But with this, the tournament didn't run that long. There was, what, four matches, five counting the exhibition match?
Yeah.
It felt great. It felt fine. I wasn't burnt out on the tournament by the time that everything was over.
I mean, you contrast that with the last day of Overwatch League with the Stage 1 playoffs. Uh-huh. And yeah, that really felt like it dragged.
Well, something else we didn't comment on either is one of the things that they do in the collegiate scene is loser picks the next map.
That is also a really interesting format choice. Yeah. And I think, you know, to our some of our previous discussions, and one of your points that you had made during the show, Joe, is that I really do think that it's going to take rule and format choices like that to make collegiate leagues stand out against the pros. Because, obviously you don't have quite the high tier play that the pros have, and you've got to supplement that in some way, shape, or form. And you know, we've always been curious, well, how are they going to do that? And I do think that clever rule choices, you know, around stuff like that is going to be really important. And also, you know, I don't know if the you know, the timing of the meta shift was purposeful on Blizzard's part, because of course, you know, we do know that all community tournaments are supposed to be run through Play Overwatch, right? Like they've kind of outlawed the other tournaments, the community tournaments, and so I do think that that may be to the benefit of everyone if Blizzard wants to try to strategically place tournaments like this in the downtime of OWL. There's a lot of smart strategic planning that I think is going on here.
And to your point about, you know, being able to do have minor rule adjustments going from the collegiate to the pro level, I mean, think about football. In football, a catch is, you know, 2 feet in bounds. In college, you only have to get one foot in bounds. And it completely changes the game, even though that's a tiny rule change,
right?
But it completely changes the way you see offense played. Doing small things like that just to create a little bit of difference between pros and college scene. And like you say, loser picks or winner picks the map.
Yeah, I think it was loser picks.
Loser picks the map. Classic gaming rules. Loser picks the map. That is a small change that never needs to be in the pro scene.
Sure.
But would stand out and make a difference on the college scene. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also talk about the latest in esports news, as well as some upcoming events.
I will be completely honest. This got on the outline here purely because I want to talk about more PUBG. I love talk. There's like, so you have games that you love to play and games that you love to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a game that, even though I do enjoy playing it, I love talking about it.
I like watching it.
This is, and you know, for a game that when it first came out, we said this is a very hard to view. This is gonna be a very hard to view game. Like, it was hard to wrap our minds around viewing this game.
Yeah, especially as you know, as someone who had played it and knew the scope of what was going on.
There is no game I enjoy watching more on Twitch.
It's very true.
Agreed.
It's very true.
Oh, to just throw on. I'm not doing that. Let me just throw on some. Yeah. See who's streaming PUBG.
Well, and even in terms of tournament play, I think, you know, watching the evolution, and granted, we've only had, you know,
a handful of events to
really kind of pick through. But, you know, watching the evolution of it, and, you know, I think maybe even having that point of context to go, man, I don't know how they're going to do this. And then having them do that and do it and be really effective at it is really fun to watch. Like, that, I think, is really cool.
I'm interested to just see, you know, what... You know, what comes out of the whole strategy game? Because I didn't get a chance to see the match at what is Oakland.
Where at IEM Oakland?
Yeah, IEM Oakland. And I'm interested to really, really see, you know, how strategy unfolds, you know, when these are, you know, money is money on the line opposed to just, you know, getting some chicken
dinners.
Norris,
you're going to love it.
Yeah, true. Because I wasn't able to watch all of Oakland either. I picked up a lot of it on like the replays and the highlight videos. So being able to watch it unfold like as it's happening.
By the way, how long is it going to be before we have a PUBG League sponsored by KFC?
Oh, the chicken dinner.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
That's going to be awesome.
I thought we were going to end up talking about Cheddar Bay biscuits again, and I was going
to—he was triggered.
Punch you.
He's going to lose his mind.
But I think that is probably, that makes sense, right? At least more sense than. Well, wrestling,
you're gonna get the golden frying pan with a chicken dinner in it. That will be your actual prize. I'm into that.
Wait. What, the cross promotion? What about going to KFC and getting the PUBG special that comes in a golden bucket?
Ooh. Or the golden frying pan?
Take home your own golden bucket.
Then you have a randomly generated KFC in game that has a golden frying pan in game that is a one hit kill.
Oh.
And when you get the golden bucket, there's a chance that it will have a golden frying pan in it, and you win a trip to the PUBG Corp headquarters.
Yeah.
KFC, give us a call. We got ideas.
We got mad ideas.
We've got plans for you guys.
This sounds like something Nintendo of America would have clearly came up with.
Absolutely.
It would have been a diamond-encrusted frying pan.
But I'm really excited to see how much the pro-casting scene for PUBG has evolved since IEM Oakland.
Not just IEM Oakland, but... official release of the game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have to believe with how much development has been given to the game,
mm-hmm.
that there have been additional tools, hopefully, given to the casters to be able to, to really provide an interesting and comprehensive viewing experience. And I mean, you know, again, all you got to do is go back and listen to our conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago with Matrim, that the casters and those on the production side are very aware of those tools that they need and have been very articulate about what they need to be able to put on a better presentation. I'm excited to see how much the presentation ends up evolving once we get to IEM Katowice. It's a big stage to be playing on, too, because, I mean, you know, as we had mentioned in the segment, it's a lot of days.
It's a lot of days.
It's a lot of days of playing stuff.
And PUBG is kicking it off, too. Like, they're right on the lead of the event. Actually, the 24th. What isn't today? The
21st.
Wow,
that's right around the corner.
Yeah, like that's this weekend.
Yeah.
So get pumped.
So PUBG action coming right around the corner. We also talk about, or actually rather play the game, Who Said It?
Who did say it?
Robbie, you were the one who kind of came up with this game.
Yeah,
what's in the bag?
Sort of.
Is it even a game?
As I said, you were my muse. I think we had just started quoting game stuff after a show last week.
Picturing Nate in a siren cosplay, and I'm not happy about it.
And someone, I think it was Nate or myself, was just like, man, this would be a really good game. And we're like, do it.
Hey, wait a minute. We have a show where we play games.
Boom. Yeah.
There it is.
It's a match made.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought going into it, the problem was going to be like we were all going to know the quotes time.
No. See,
it was the opposite problem.
Yeah. See,
we overthought, I think, all of them.
Not for me. I won.
You know what, Norris? No one likes a sore winner.
Yeah, see, I was definitely conscious of who has played these games. Because I immediately went to a bunch of Mass Effect quotes, but Norris would have been the only one possibly getting them. So
Yeah,
I didn't know if my selection was unfair, because I don't know if any of you guys have actually played Legend of Dragoon.
I have, but man, so long ago.
Dude, I said, I did, but
man,
I was like
that
a
needs
kid.
An HD so
I haven't
bad.
Gone back and played it.
It yet. Really does. I mean, and yeah, to the point, the segment that we ended on, Legend of Dragoon, definitely getting some love on the HD remaster front.
I wanted to do a line from the Emperor, because any game that has the Emperor in it is worth buying. Even Battlefront 2 is worth it just to hear the Emperor talk.
All right, give us a line. Give us an Emperor line.
All right.
You do not know the power of the dark side.
I was watching Riff Tracks the other day, and There was a movie that was on where it's like the worst D&D campaign that you could ever possibly imagine.
All of them.
And the group of heroes walks into this little alcove, and it literally is like something out of a video game where they're like, there's something buried in the ground and there's someone hanging from the tree, and they're like, oh, wait, maybe we shouldn't be here. And a whole bunch of like dudes in robes with scythes pop out of the ground. And
this is a riff tracks,
and then the riffers start going, oh, it's a whole bunch of Palpatines that are popping out of the crowd, and they all start doing young Skywalker, like all on top of each other on every time. The guys get oh my god, it's the funniest. It had me rolling when I was watching it the other night.
Again,
dude, I cannot speak highly enough of the Riff Tracks channel.
He is so great to do impressions of, just because you can't do an impression of him without like doing the facial expressions.
Yeah, that's
too.
True.
It's required. You have to they say like, oh my god, look at the way he overacts these lines. Like, no. That's just the only way to do those voices.
You know, to this date, my favorite Emperor-related meme internet thing is still where someone dubbed over all of his lines with Mark Hamill's Joker lines. Oh, it's brilliant. If you haven't seen it, look it up.
Oh, that's so good.
So
I want to see that.
And then we wrap up our first hour with our first serious discussion about Adderall in esports. And whether or not Adderall and other ADHD medications qualify as performance-enhancing drugs for esports.
It's really hard to say they don't, since what they literally do is make you focus better.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah. Right.
Well, and I mean, you know, we, I think the point was brought up more than a few times of, you know, like, there are people who have very legitimate, you know, prescriptions for these, for these substances. But, you know, it makes me think, like, okay, well, but there are people who are put on all kinds of different steroids for medical
reasons to help heal.
As well, but doesn't that technically disqualify them from sport if they're in it?
It does. Yeah.
Here's one of the things I was thinking, because on the actual show, Callie, you specifically mentioned how in the NFL, can't be on marijuana,
right,
even if you need it for something like glaucoma or something, right?
Right.
Are there not alternative methods that they
to glaucoma use? Treatment? Right. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So I think what we, I don't know if they, you know, do this just for esports specifically, but, you know, if we're going to straight up ban medication that some people do rely on, I feel like there has to be alternatives right?
And here's the other problem is because Adderall and Ritalin are for ADHD, to my knowledge, you cannot go get a blood test that confirms whether or not you have ADHD.
That is all. That is very, very true.
The diagnosis is subjective.
Yes.
Which means that if anyone really wanted to get Ritalin or Adderall, you could be coached on how to properly pass a test for it.
Ooh. That is very true.
And that makes
and the test, by the way, again, I mentioned multiple times that in many periods of my life, from when I was a small child in elementary school,
a wee little boy,
I was on Ritalin. I think all the way until maybe my junior year of high school, my sophomore junior year of high school. And then as an adult, when I started seeing a psychologist, they gave me a written test and said that I also qualified for ADHD. And, you know, I've been taking Adderall in various dosages for 2 or 3 years because I was I think I had started taking it when I was working over at the public radio station. And it wasn't until I started taking it, you know, 5 or 6 days a week, and I started taking it in the time release XR form of it, that I really started to feel the burnout, the very real physical toll that it was taking on me, because all of these drugs are uppers. You're talking about various forms of amphetamines, you know, literally, you know, if you get a prescription for Adderall, it's called amphetamine salts. And it is a stimulant that is meant to help you focus. That takes a toll on your body. For me, I would go entire days without eating. You know, not that I necessarily didn't want to eat, but that I wouldn't allocate time for eating.
Right.
And I'd forget to.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, it would be 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. I'd be ready to go to bed. You don't want to eat that late, right?
I hear you.
It's not good. It's not good for your health. Well, so, you know, I have a lot of experience with ADHD, and you know, I do, yeah, like, the diagnosis is subjective. I do think that, you know, it's overdiagnosed, it's overprescribed.
Let me ask you this. If you were, someone called you up and wanted to sign you onto an esports team,
yeah,
but it was for, say, ESL, and they said your drug testing will be a part of this, would you feel comfortable, or would you feel okay knowing you'd have to give up Adderall to compete? Would you feel like I'd be leveling the playing field?
Considering that I've recently, within the last 2 months, it was actually my New Year's resolution was
to give up Adderall
to scale back the amount of medications that I was taking, because I was very close to burnout. And I don't think that I'm speaking as a 33-year-old man.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Who's probably not going to be seeing an esports team anytime soon.
Not even that, but I mean, just knowing what I know about the nature of chemicals and about my own body, I don't think that that's something that I would have said that's a deal breaker.
Right.
I think I would have.
But your average 18-year-old probably does do it.
Right.
Because they don't have that context, and you're 18 and you're probably feeling like, oh, whatever, I'll be doing this for a little bit, and then I need to have all the advantages I can because I don't know how long I'm going to be able to do this.
And, We have one more comment or one more quote from Alex Buck, whose comments kind of got us to this subject.
Sure.
And I didn't get a chance to read on the show, but it says, I doubt teams/organizations are directly encouraging it, but they must know what's going on and probably prefer plausible deniability so they don't ask. And I think that's scary, because if you are one of these organizations, if you are Team SoloMid or C9 or whoever it is, your first responsibility is and always will be to your players.
The health of your players.
It's the health of your players, your fans.
Yeah.
And then your investors are probably your 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And if you are turning a blind eye to abusing medication to perform at a higher level, I understand that, you know, it is a competitive environment and you need every advantage that you can get. But at some point, having healthy players has to come first.
Yeah, but that's again, yeah, the responsibility is towards the players, but we're talking about a certain paradigm where people don't just start teams out of the kindness of their heart. They start
it's teams a money making
because
endeavor.
They want to make money.
Right.
Yes, and so yeah, you are gonna have people turning a blind eye to something like this because, and I hate to say it, no, the players' best interests are not at heart, especially even if I think this, if it's a successful team and a team that's been winning consistently. I do think, you know, that if you had a player who was abusing Adderall, that you might have, you know, a couple coaches who see it and many, don't say anything.
How many teams have we reported on this very show that don't pay their players?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, you know, I don't think that teams always will have the benefit of their players. They should. I think
that's
coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Perfect world. Yeah.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda. Right. Like I don't know that all organizations are going to end up seeing it the exact same way. And so, you know, I do think that is, you know, an important point to make that, yeah, they're probably not being helped by the team or coaches or they're, you know, being assisted in any way. But I do think that it's something that everyone in esports needs to be aware of. And I do think that it's a conversation worth having, because there's also another very important aspect to this, and that's the aspect of legitimate competition and whether or not, you know, it's like steroid, like, you know, steroids, Joe, you had brought baseball, this brought this up during the show. It's like steroids in baseball. It questions the legitimacy of the results at the end of the day. And
I don't want to have to go back and put asterisks in the books,
yes,
in the record books, you know, 15 years from now and have people go back, oh, yeah, those numbers were great, but they were all inflated because that was the Adderall era.
I mean, it seems like, you know, if esports wants to be taken seriously, you know, in the world of sports, then the competition has to be legitimate and players have got to be on a level playing field, whether it means everyone taking Adderall or no one taking Adderall.
It, yep.
You know, it's got to be one of the two things, and I don't think that mandatory Adderall is going to be it's going to go over very well.
No, I would think not.
Wow. Right? So, what's the answer here? Do esports teams, do esports leagues, larger organizations start drug testing? What's the answer?
I think, of course, it has to start with a league. A league has to have a well thought out, comprehensive.
Well, the ESL is the first
policy.
One, yeah.
Right, and as far as I know, you know, the other leagues don't.
They don't.
You know,
not that
nothing,
we can find any.
Yeah,
proof
there's
of.
Nothing on paper that we can find that
right.
You know about their drug policy. So, I mean, even that in and of itself is a little bit concerning and dangerous because, you know, let's even just take Adderall out of the questions. Let's just say somebody who just, you know, dropped acid and decided to play Overwatch and that just made them better. You know what I mean? Like,
that is not possible. No,
it's
I don't
not
believe that.
Possible.
No,
just transcend
no.
some mortal.
No. Nate,
nope.
That's not my point. I know it's not possible, but it's the fact that you haven't tested a motherfucker for having LSD.
I'm just saying, like, if you set someone on LSD in front of Overwatch, they're
going
to become
probably
a shrieking, drooling mess in 10 minutes, as opposed to finding some amazing Overwatch ability that they've never been able to find before.
Otherwise known as Bastion Mains.
Got him!
Oh! He's good for one every now and then.
Yeah, he gets one every now and then.
Here's the thing, though. Last point about this. Last thought on this. And I'm gonna play a bit of devil's advocate here and speak specifically to the player that we were quoting, the Halo player.
Yeah, Alex Buck.
Alex Buck. Could it be that this is just sore loserdom? Like, he didn't do very well, and he's lashing out at Adderall as the reason why he didn't do well? I mean,
but even if he does that, you know, if this is enough to get somebody, you know, intrigued enough to launch any sort of investigation or to really think about, you know, drug use in esports, then it doesn't really matter the intention, in my opinion.
Well, but I mean, it sounds like he, I mean, listen, if you want to be super cynical about it, you'd be like, okay, so he probably lost to someone who has an Adderall prescription. He found out, and now he's got an axe to grind. Because when you say, you know, that this is a problem behind the scenes, what that usually has a mental picture of, like, dude, people are gacking rails up, and you know what I mean?
I
like,
can see where you're coming from, but
it's not quite a party atmosphere. It's like, you know, like, oh, you know, some kid is in the corner quietly taking his medication, and that some, you know what I mean? Like, I understand from kind of both sides of the mm-hmm. fence here that, you know, this could be someone who had a tough match and sure. is just looking for a reason to explain why he had a tough match or why he lost against someone. Well, and I also understand the other side of it too, that's like, well, how can I possibly hope to compete against all of these kids jacked up on amphetamines?
Well, and I understand that could well be a possibility. Maybe, you know, he had a bad day or a bad match against someone who's using Adderall and decided to lash out. Even if that's the case, and this is coming from the most self-centered, selfish places, it doesn't make the point any less valid. It is still an issue in the scene that is going to have to get dealt with one way or another. He isn't lying, there is rampant Adderall abuse. That is true.
Is this evidence of abuse of medication in esports, or is this evidence of a highly medicated generation?
No, but I mean, if he's really talking about, you know, it, first of all, they both can be true.
I think both are true, but I think, like, doesn't this really challenge the notion that, like, you know, if we tell these kids, these esports pros, like, listen, man, you're going to have to get off the Adderall, there's going to be some kids who are looking back at those officials going, like, I was taking this when I was 5.
Well, Skuro in chat earlier said, like, if he was in that position, if it came down to Adderall or esports, he'd have to give up esports.
I mean, there are some people who really, I mean,
will fall into that category,
believe that they need it to function, and they very well may need it to function in their regular lives. So if again, if you're drug testing people, it means that it's not just before the tournament, and it's right. not just, you know, around the tournament itself. You're testing long term whether they're using this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
that can be problematic.
It could be. I do think that there is an element, though, of when you are competing in professional sport, not everyone's body or mind can. True. There will be people who just, you cannot. Like,
you can't do
it. Not everyone can play in the NFL.
Right. Okay, no, you know what? That's fair. If you say no Adderall and your brain can't function without Adderall, then okay, yeah. you're not esports material.
I mean, like, it doesn't matter how good.
That'd be a big calling of talent right there.
It would.
Being a big shakeup of talent.
It would be.
I mean, but think about it, dude. I could be the greatest basketball player on earth right now at 5'8", a buck 50. I'm not about to do too much in the NBA, point blank period.
I mean,
it's a conversation that's not going anywhere.
It's not. Although I think for people to really take it seriously, unfortunately, like most things, there's going to need to be a case that takes it to such an extreme that people can't ignore it.
And
whether that's someone's bad behavior or whether that's I hope to God this doesn't happen, someone dying or overdosing.
In 20 years, when we start seeing people whose brains are ravaged by Adderall abuse, then you'll start hearing about it.
I hope not.
So what happened with CTE in the NFL?
Yeah. Well, you're right. You're right. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I hope that it doesn't have to come to that.
I agree.
We also talk about the latest in video game news, as well as loot boxes coming before the United States government.
Man, we joked in November that this story was the gift that keeps on giving.
Nah, we called it, man.
For us in the industry, where we need stuff to talk about, man, did we ever call that
loot
one?
Loot boxes took up about a good...
Three or
half
four
a year
weeks
almost.
In a row, it was our hot topic.
Worth of content.
There was more than a few episodes where we were talking about it. And now, you know, it looks like, the U.S. government is going to be,
they're on the doorstep.
Possibly.
If the ESRB doesn't get their shit in gear.
That's the point, is the fact that the ESRB, I understand it, but you've been in this position before. Here's the part I don't understand. You came about because... games were under fire for their content, for their violent content and sometimes adult content, right?
Right.
You came under fire for that. You came together as an organization and you created a rating system and you say, you know what, here, this is a measure of self-regulation.
Yep.
This is us trying to be responsible to make sure that the proper games get in the hands of the proper people without shaking the market up too much, without, you know, pissing off retailers and game developers. Why are they... What is going on with this?
We haven't even heard, like, all right, you're right. It's gone too far. We're looking into it now.
And, well, I think that you have massively different discussions between loot boxes and violent content. Because with violent content, you can take a purely abstract argument and a purely First Amendment argument to say, well, if you can't have violent or adult content in games, then doesn't that limit my free speech, First Amendment,
right?
My First Amendment rights. That's not applicable with loot boxes. It's in no way applicable with loot boxes. Loot boxes speak to gambling. And what's really interesting is again, there seem to be there's a bit more of an altruistic motive in trying to say, I want to protect my ability to say and to portray whatever scenario a creator wants, versus now they're protecting their bottom line. They're protecting their ability to make money. And I really don't like seeing the ESRB not acting the way that a regulatory body should be, because, you know, and I mean, we even had someone in our chat mention this earlier. I think it was Rebel Rain, that it really feels like, especially in this case, that the ESRB is on the take from the video game industry and that they're really just protecting their bottom line. And
you can only do that for so long when it's in the Congress, is the Senate now? Like,
yeah, we're talking about upper levels of government.
It's moving up the government, and we still haven't heard anything from the ESRB since loot boxes aren't gambling.
That's the damning part to me, is the fact that no statement has even come out. I mean, it's gotten to the point to where the federal government, maybe by the end of the year, could be hearing, you know, could be having something on the floor about
even
this.
Even if they said, all right, we're reevaluating.
Yes.
That would be something.
That would be better than what we've got now, which is nothing, which is just their stance that it's not gambling. And, you know, even if you believe that, any motherfucking thing I'm doing that gets all the way to Congress, I'm yelling from every rooftop. I'm doing everything
plan
I can.
Plan A, plan B, plan C.
To get it out of Congress and so that I'm not getting the federal government involved.
And once again, we've reached out to Senator Maggie Hassan, as well as the ESRB, for a statement or a possible interview. We'll let you know what ends up coming of that. We also took a bit of a moment to self-reflect on the nature of violence in video games. A pretty tough discussion, especially in the wake of the tragedy in Parkland, Florida.
Yep.
But a necessary discussion. And I think, you know, the point that we were driving at in this segment is to say that, you know, our favorite thing in the world is video games. Yep. Clearly, we've built an entire show around it. We like to talk about video games. We like to play video games. We like to watch other people play video games. This is something that, you know, we like to spend our free time with and spend a lot of money with and feel like occasionally needs some protection. And I think, you know, with fingers being pointed and some of them being pointed at video games or violent media, that there has to be a willingness to at least go, okay, you have a point, right? That's what I don't hear enough of, is someone who hears something that they may personally disagree with, but be able to still go, okay, there may be something to that.
And really, I want to say the games community is like particularly guilty of this sometimes when it, you know, comes to
reflexively
yeah. looking inward and talking about violent content in video games, because, you know, yes, the studies have come out to say that there's no correlation. Yes, the studies have come out to say, you know, whatever it is about, you know, mental health, connections to mental health in video games. However, at the same time, you know, and Robbie, you said it on the show fairly eloquently that, you know, the situation can be a lot better when every community, when every sub, you know, culture can look at something like violence and say, what can we do better about it?
Yeah, look at your backyard and ask what you can do to help.
Exactly. Yeah. And so as gamers, I'm happy we're able to have the conversation. But, you know, maybe we should be having a conversation to say, do I really need to see like a disembowelment in Mortal Kombat?
Well, I'd actually like to thank Nate, because it was something that he mentioned on one of our other shows where he said, you know, when I hear the way that gun owners are reacting to these accusations, it's the same way that we react about video games. And I had like a glass shattering sort of moment. And I asked myself if they require, because, you know, one of the things were like, oh, well, we can get mental health checks. If someone was like, oh, well, fine, you know what? You have to get mental health checks to buy, you know,
Grand Theft Auto
18 plus games. Would that be a huge inconvenience? Yeah. But if I thought that it would help, you know what? Yeah.
Fine, I would do it.
I'm grown, so I can go by the game if I feel like it.
Inconvenience me if one person is safe or not murdered. Inconvenience me all you want.
That
doesn't bother me. I mean, I'll complain about it.
Of course. By all means, you can't complain
about it. This is America. Yeah, you can complain about whatever you want.
But let's just save people, man.
A really thought out, heartfelt discussion there on the show this week, and I want to commend all three of you guys for doing such a good job there. We also talk about esports and television. Does esports actually need television to continue to survive and grow?
No,
it doesn't, but I do think that TV probably could benefit from some of the audience numbers that esports pulls in.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
See, I think for the longest time, my desire to see esports on television was almost just for me, a way to thumb my nose at my parents
validation.
And say, look at that. Hey, look what's on TV. And hey, remember when you said I couldn't play video games professionally? Remember when you ruined my dreams and crippled me as a human being?
Oh. Wait, was that your parents or was it Bubsy?
Ooh.
Bubsy was my dad. I admit it, all right?
No, but you're right. Whenever I think about when I have conversations about, oh, well, just wait, blah, 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 it's always in relation to someone who's doubting the idea of it, you know?
Well, and it does seem to be like their litmus test for it is like, well,
is it
if
on
it's
TV?
On if it's on TV, then it's a real thing.
I don't know why
they sound like Forrest Gump.
I think I've heard someone
voice
say
was that?
That exact thing. No, that's one of my coworkers. That is one of my coworkers right there.
Oh my God! But I mean,
well, in your village, I believe that some people sound like that.
You live in a village too.
Yeah, my village though is in the middle of like three huge cities.
Does not matter.
There's actually quite a difference.
Is there a farm in your village?
He lives on one.
Yeah, okay, there's no farms in my village
not anymore. I bet I can find a farm in your village.
But the whole thing is that. Did you say you could find a farm?
I bet I could.
There are no farms in Clawson.
Oh my God. But anyway, as I was saying, I really do think that it would be advantageous for Twitch to just say FTV and we gonna do our own thing. And as a matter of fact, we've done this whole Twitch thing so well that we will make our own channel and bless y'all.
Let me show you how to do TV.
Let me show you how to do TV, because all the young motherfuckers want to watch our stuff.
I really do think that Twitch has a very big opportunity to make the jump into into traditional broadcasting. And I think that they have this opportunity to build not necessarily a gaming centric brand, because the content on Twitch has started to become so diverse. You've got categories that you can stream in, like IRL and talk show, cooking, always on, creative. There's all these different categories that people are able to, take a stab at making content in. And I think that, Twitch could end up evolving in 10 years. We talk about the next phase of Twitch.
Look at the way that Dr. Disrespect is doing his stream now. Like, in some ways, it's like a straight variety show.
Absolutely. And I think that Twitch really does have an opportunity with the talent that's already on the platform, with the amount of exclusive contracts and deals that they've been able to broker to their platform, that I do think that they could make a real stab at not just making like a broadcast cable channel, but actually making a youth-focused media brand that talks to people under 30. That's something that is sorely needed. MTV hasn't even talked to a generation under 30 in 10 years.
In a generation.
Exactly.
Ouch.
Right? Like, the last time I remember MTV even, being halfway relevant to young people was when I was in college. That was 10 years
ago.
And
that was it.
Right? Like, since then, it's, because of the internet, our interests have been scattered to the winds. And in terms of trying to find an audience 35 and under, that's been very difficult for not just broadcast television, but radio and
media,
really,
in
all
general.
Media in general, except for streaming media.
Twitch and YouTube.
Well, Spotify
is
in there too, I think.
Podcasting
in general, because the reason for that is people can seek out exactly what it is they want, and there's such a plethora of media to select from.
Yeah.
But when you go to your TV, you have your channels, which admittedly there's thousands of channels, but maybe, what's the joke? Thousands of channels and nothing's on.
Yeah. But here's where Twitch would have the advantage, is that by, putting up a 24-hour, programming schedule, you throw something on and somebody goes, let me see what's on Twitch, because I already fuck with Twitch, but my TV just happens to be on right now.
Dude,
let me just fucking see what's on Twitch. You cut it on and it's on some channel you would have never gone to.
Sure.
On Twitch.
And but it's highly entertaining,
yeah,
right?
Like,
you're taking the best of the best of Twitch and you're putting it out there for people to be sort of like an introductory channel to the whole Twitch platform.
And now it becomes cyclical, because what do? They watch it on the Twitch TV channel, then they go back and watch it on Twitch, and then they say, oh man, now they're doing live shows on Twitch TV.
Yeah,
let me throw it up on my TV.
And for as much development as people are putting towards making their own talk shows and creating their own insular brands, and you've got things like the music channels and those exclusive contracts that Twitch has brokered with labels like Monster Cat and Rhinesayers Entertainment and some of these big record labels that you could. Am I crazy, or is that not a radio station right there?
Pretty much.
Like, if Twitch wanted to create a youth focused brand, Twitch, Twitch TV on TV, Twitch radio on radio.
Twitch, a.k.a. Amazon Media.
Exactly. Listen, Amazon, you have my number. You can give me a call.
Anytime, night or day.
Seriously.
We have some great ideas and, of course, a fully fleshed out media strategy.
And not just that. I can do media training for people.
Indeed,
because I have taken not just these three fine gentlemen in the room, although although Norris, you get some credit because you were in the broadcasting field
before that.
Was already
a fine gentleman.
I've taken you guys as well as some of our other podcast crew and really whipped you guys into very, very good professional broadcasters. And I've got no doubt that, you want to send me some of Twitch's top talent. I could get them into shape to be a radio station, to be a TV station, anytime you want.
Faint of heart need not apply.
We know Jeff is a big listener of the show.
That's right.
Senor Bezos.
That's right.
Love to hear from you, man.
Senor Bezos.
Senor Bezos.
I like that. And then, of course, we wrap up today talking about our social media question. If you could remaster any game, what would it be? And I mean remake any game, you know, just fully remake it from the ground up.
Yeah.
You can find all of those conversations over at our website, checkpointradio.com. On-demand episodes get uploaded every single Tuesday. All right, before we get out of here, of course, we've got a podcast topic to talk about.
That's right. So along with Stage 2 finally launching for the OWL, so does their incentive program for watching. If you connect your Blizzard account with either Twitch, the MLG site, or OverwatchLeague.com, you accrue basically the tokens that you would normally purchase to buy the team skins in the game. You can start accruing those. You get one per map finished, and at the end of a match, a percentage of viewers will get the straight up 100 tokens, which is normally $5, right? So, yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. Just
now, what are the tokens used for?
To buy the team skin specifically from within the game.
Mm-hmm. And before this, how were you able to get those
tokens?
You could only buy them.
They gave away a free skin the first week.
Yeah, when they rolled it out, you got a free skin. Yeah,
but, I kind of like this. Am I crazy for liking this?
This is awesome.
Incentivizes the viewer to actually view. It's great. It's a novel, crazy idea.
But
and again,
wait.
Something that only Twitch could do right now.
There's more, because not just Twitch is doing that part. What Twitch is doing is if you buy bits and cheer bits to your favorite team, you unlocks, and they haven't announced any of what this special content is, but you could unlock exclusive skins that I think, if they do it correctly, will not be available anywhere else. Special like emotes for the teams and different sprays and stuff like that. And not just at like a one-to-one level to like, oh, okay, there, Norris, you've, you know, sent 500 bits, so here's your Reaper skin for Valiant, right? There's also, they've been talking about like community type stuff. So if as a community or as certain teams hit certain thresholds, you can unlock special content.
Oh, now I like that.
So that also drives the like team pride and like the rivalry and stuff. Imagine Dallas and Houston going up against each other. And it's like, all right, whichever team gets the most bits cheered this match, they get a special skin, and the other team done getting nothing.
I don't know how I feel about the bits part, because bits are basically just their Twitch currency.
They are.
Twitch currency, but you got to pay real money to be able to get bits.
So essentially, it's donations.
It is basically donations. Yes. I feel very weird about that.
That one's because I like the concept, but you're right. It is skirting the line when basically what they're saying is give us money.
Give us money.
But again, at the same time, though, when you're talking about skins and sprays and stuff, those are generally either loot boxes or microtransactions.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So there is a cost associated with those as well. I don't know how I feel about this.
Here's what I think about this. I think this is brilliant in that, you know, we've talked about how skins and cosmetics are so dirt cheap to develop and so dirt cheap to market that they can make ungodly profit margins on them. The other half of that is you can give those away as marketing expenses. Just call it a marketing loss. Like, hey, we gave these away as promotional material.
And yeah, which, by the way,
that promotional material costed you next to nothing.
The OWL teams on like Twitter and Facebook and stuff are constantly having little contests to give out free tokens and stuff.
Exactly. And that, because at the end of the day, that gives you effectively nothing, and you're incentivizing people to actually tune in and watch your stuff.
The tokens I think I'm fine with.
The problem that he has is that they're finding another way to sort of squeeze money out of people.
Yeah. Right.
And I think the reason why I'm on the edge like you, but I think the reason I'm leaning more okay towards it is depending on where this money goes specifically. Obviously, yes, Twitch is getting some of the money, right? But if this is being filtered back into the teams, like the when you buy tokens for or in the actual game itself, that goes to the teams as well. I'm more okay with it for some reason.
Okay,
I feel like I'm supporting my team.
But let's say you're. Let me find a diplomatic way to say this.
Okay, I mean you can say it undiplomatically.
What
if
you're a skin whore? And you need to have, like, almost every, you know, you buy loot boxes compulsively, you know, one of those types of players, and now you know, Overwatch is like, oh, well, hey, you got to spend money over here, too, if you want to get everything.
It's definitely skirting that that line.
I definitely feel like, you know, in the same way that loot boxes kind of prey on that obsessive and compulsive nature to get something that you really, really want.
Right.
I feel like this is sort of playing on that same that same feedback mechanism.
Is there a way you think that they could remove that element? Like if any one person is only allowed to contribute 100 bits to the pot, because that's only a dollar.
Right. No, I don't know. I mean, I do understand the economics of it for sure. You know, this is a good deal for Twitch, and Twitch paid $90 million to get the OWL here. Yeah. They might as well get something out of it. And I'm sure that they take a percentage or a cut of
they do.
You know, the bits.
Mm-hmm. Well, they get their cut when you purchase the
right.
bits.
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got skin in the game. It makes sense. I just, it for some reason...
Makes your skin...
No, it's
not even quite that bad. I feel like... And not even being that big of a fan of Overwatch, mostly ambivalent about it, to be totally honest with you. But it just feels like, you know, okay, Overwatch does it, like, with the loot boxes. Overwatch did it. It was super successful. And then other games did it, but made it super predatory.
So he's saying the precedent.
That somebody else might take this same concept and warp it beyond.
Yeah.
Oh, this opens the door for something more ugly
really
in the future.
Does. Yeah, possible. Yeah, because I mean,
I get
Blizzard,
what you're saying.
Blizzard
and Twitch would be cool with it because they get their cut.
But Blizzard, you know, and to Blizzard's credit, they always seem to really measure all of these decisions and make cost benefit analysis on all of this so that it feels fair all around. You're like, it's not even that much money. I'll just whatever.
Blizzard listens to their PR team very well.
But the thing is that you're right. This does open the door for, I think, something a little bit more insidious with someone who doesn't have as many scruples as someone like Blizzard does.
I completely
or who isn't even as smart as Blizzard.
Yeah. I
completely agree. I come from a traditional sports background, so I'm used to being gouged at literally every turn
moment.
When trying to root for sports. So like when I hear like, oh yeah, donate $1.50 on in bits and you can do this, I'm like, that's nothing. I just paid $12 for a hot dog.
20 for a foam finger?
Yeah, 20 for a foam finger. You want it to cost to get a jersey at a sports stadium?
Oh, it's like $100.
It's like $180.
What?
$100? All right, what stadium are you going to?
Seriously.
Dude, I was buying...
Look
I don't know.
At the look on Norris's
last time I was buying jerseys was like when I was in eighth grade. So,
all right. So in the Stone Age, yes, maybe they were only $100. They are now like double that easily. My Helm jersey I have for the Red Wings, that jersey was like $270.
Good Lord.
Right? So I'm used to being gouged in horrendous ways. So when I hear this kind of thing from Blizzard, I'm like, to root for my sports team? Yeah.
Yeah, but that's part of the problem, though, and that's why you do it, because it doesn't sound like a lot, but you got to think of the other 143,000 people who are watching the match right now, and how many of those people are going to go back and do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And but I think, Nate, what he's getting at, it actually makes a lot of sense, because...
Yeah.
On the surface, yeah, it does look really cool, and it looks like a great idea.
Yeah.
And because these loot boxes don't affect gameplay, it is a little bit easier to implement, you know, really different, you know, unique ideas like this. However, I just think that you're going to have a Battlefront situation where it's going to be like, oh, donate bits. As a matter of fact, donate your 3,000 bits and you can get this special weapon. Or donate 5,000 bits.
Yeah.
Or you know, the region that has the most bit donations, I mean, will get a new map released. And
think about it, like, you know, like, yes, if it's cosmetic and it doesn't really impact the game, then it doesn't matter. But you make that one small change that the exchange, that the item that you're getting out of it does impact gameplay, suddenly you're in Battlefield 2 territory, or Battlefront 2 territory. You know what I mean? Like, suddenly you've walked square into the problem that EA did, where they got too greedy and they were like, oh yeah, it impacts gameplay too, and people were like, put the brakes on this shit. No
And I think this is actually one thing that could get people to look at Twitch a little sideways and be like, whoa, like, come on, y'all didn't do nothing about that?
Yeah, you guys are complicit
in
that.
You guys are complicit in that.
You know, it depends on how this ends up panning out.
I just realized why I'm a little bit on the fence for this, because when they bring this down to a competitive standpoint to where, you know, let's say, all right, you know, the Mayhem's playing the Valiant, in which every team cheers the most bits, you guys get a special new skin, right? The Mayhem people, you know, throw all their bits in, and if they lose, you just put in all that money and didn't get nothing for it.
Yeah. I don't know that they could do that, though. I mean, like, I think that there's probably some...
You're right. Yeah,
legal,
yeah.
Legal.
So hopefully it's not that.
Twitch would actually yeah, send up yeah. some red flags.
But if this
there,
is like, all just community doing everything type stuff, and people rallying together, I actually really like that.
Well, and another way
it.
To avoid it too is to just make it a straight up DLC transaction later on, like a month or two down the road.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's nice to have exclusives for some things,
exclusive.
But for sure, like I think that, you know, to avoid some pretty serious sharp criticism there, that they're going to have to think through that whole process.
Yeah.
That's where it's nice to be working with Blizzard here, who usually doesn't get it wrong, and when they do, they usually fix it pretty quick. Good but point. Like you say, it opens the door for people who aren't so great,
right?
So.
I mean,
yeah,
just imagine that this is, you know, an average, normal feature that Twitch is shopping around to different developers, right. And, you know, someone like Digital Homicide gets a hold of it. I mean, that's a pretty extreme example, but, you know, like, someone, EA, you know, gets their fingers in that. That's probably actually a pretty logical conclusion, given how big EA is.
And the other half of this, too, is, like you mentioned, Twitch has a $90 million partnership with Blizzard. Right. They're probably willing to work with them on things they may not work with others on.
That's a fair point. All right, we're going to have to leave the discussion right there. Thanks so much for joining us for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. CheckpointRadio.com is where you can find out more info about the show, as well as full episodes on demand posted every Tuesday, interviews from past episodes, as well as much, much more. That's all over at CheckpointRadio.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's CheckPT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint Radio is a production of Westwood One. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our producers, Rick Scott, Kevin Graham, and Christine Corpus. For the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to CheckpointRadio.com.